Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, on the NBA side, we got a three-team trade to sift through. We got some free agency movement, and we talk about some of the best free agents remaining. We then shift to the W side. We tap in on a big weekend for Caitlin Clark. We check in with the New York Liberty, and then we have a nice all-star discussion. We talk about the teams that were drafted, and we sort through who the Kelsey Plum replacement should be if a replacement is needed. We hope you have fun with this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are we doing?
Good day. Let's talk some basketball.
All righty. Let's talk some basketball indeed. We are still waiting on hashtag the big transaction. But in the meantime, we have had a little bit of roster movement in the NBA. And we start with a three-team trade, Steve, came through the pipeline over the weekend. As I was, like, flying back home, funny enough, the Atlanta Hawks, the Dallas Mavericks, the Oklahoma City Thunder agreeing to a deal. The Hawks getting Lu Dort from the Thunder and Ryan Nembhard from the Mavericks. The Mavericks getting Zachary Richichet and the Oklahoma City Thunder receiving 3 second-round picks. That deal gets them underneath the second apron, which I would imagine means, hey, Cason Wallace, let's work out a new deal. Hey, A.J. Mitchell, let's work out a new deal soon. Going to get the financials in order, but they also add more pick equity. They have now acquired 7 second-round picks this offseason. When you consider this trade, plus trading away Aaron Wiggins and other moves they've made so far this offseason. So, Steve, with this deal, where do you start? Where does your intrigue lie with this three-team deal?
My intrigue lies in how you reacted to this trade in the aisle seat and how everyone else reacted to this trade. But we can get back to that. I think the biggest thing for me is I wasn't ready. Like, we had the Lu Dort question mark hanging over our heads for most of the offseason. They traded Isaiah Joe. They traded Aaron Wiggins. It was apparent they were going to have to do things financially. And so when, like, you see the move, and I like to wait, and then it's like the Thunder are going to save $300 million next season. It's like, oh, I understand why these moves have been made. So I think for OKC, tough to lose a player like Lu Dort, but you do have A.J. Mitchell, who played so well last year. You do have Cason Wallace, who played so well and fits in defensively. You do have Jared McCain, who you acquired. So there are pieces that you can kind of put back into place to kind of move around the board and make things a little bit different. So it's not the same, but it can be similar. Mm-hmm. Atlanta getting Lu Dort is fun to me in the sense that I like the idea of watching Lu Dort and Dyson Daniels play defense at the same time. I don't know how many minutes they'll do it. I don't know how long they'll get to it. But if we're talking in the playoffs, and Atlanta is able to kind of have this high-paced, chaotic play with a Dyson Daniels and Lu Dort who can potentially guard your top perimeter players, I think that levels them up to a degree. Mm-hmm. So I, for one, am just intrigued to kind of see what his minutes are like. You know, obviously, we've seen Quinn Snyder have success with a player like Royce O'Neal. So it's not apples to apples, but it's a different context for Lu Dort. We know he can drive. We know Atlanta likes to get up and down the court. We know he can defend. So I think overall, they have a little bit more lineup versatility as opposed to, well, we're just going to have to play CJ and Nah together and hope for the best. Well, we throw Lu Dort out there for a little bit. We can go smaller if we need to. You know, obviously, we like Onyeka Okongwu. Maybe we slide Jalen Johnson to the five for a little bit, and we just have Jalen, Dyson, and Lu Dort out there with two small guards if we need to. Okay. So I think that part is fun to me. The real swing buried in the trade was just Dallas saying, you know what? Yeah, we'll take a former number one pick. We'll swing on Zachary Richichet. That's no problem for us. Masai Ujiri got to Dallas, said, vision 6'9". And then we'll give me all the wings. Give me the size. Give me the versatility. We're going to try this again. We're going to do it better this time. But I think what could help him is just a different context. Now, obviously, we're not exactly sure what they're going to run, new head coach and all. But having someone who I think grew last year in a muted way, but he doesn't know, he no longer has the expectations of being the number one pick for the team he's playing for.
Yeah.
So he can just kind of go out there and play. And so can he get up and down the court? Can he make open threes? Can he drive closeouts? Can he create? Will he be able to play different positions? Can he guard different positions? There's some questions, but for Dallas, it's low risk, potentially high reward. So I'm intrigued to see what that looks like. Fun trade. What were your thoughts?
Fun trade. I think for me, we'll leave the aisle seat alone for the time being. I think for me, I kind of chuckled at the announcement of the deal. you already kind of alluded to it, but it's like, okay, breaking, Lu Dort has been traded. Also, Zachary Richesse is leaving. I was like, wait, whoa. Because to your point, we knew when they picked up the team option on Lu Dort, the immediate reporting and rumblings that came out was like, they're picking this up. They are already having conversations with multiple teams about Lu Dort. It's like, okay, I thought it was going to be a little sooner than this. But when you make that kind of decision, considering what the financials are for OKC, I thought, okay, in the next 6 hours, we got to figure out where Lu Dort's going. So the fact that it dragged on a little bit into free agency was interesting to me. But I was like, okay. And I ended up tweeting, it's funny that Lu Dort is headlining a Richesse trade. Like, it speaks to what Lu Dort has meant to OKC. You already mentioned how good the defense has been for him, just how he grew within that system, within that rebuild, became a champion, et cetera. But also, like, dang, man, Zachary Richesse was just drafted number one 2 years ago. This isn't like, when you say former number one pick, I'm thinking, okay, 2017 draft. Someone's adding this player to their rotation to, like, bolster something. This was 2024, I believe. Like, what do you mean? He's at the bottom of the tweet with Ryan Nembhard. But I do 100% agree with you that I'm excited for Richesse to be in a new context, or at least the expectation is going to be a little bit different. It's less, we need you to not only be good, but we need you to live up to number one pick billing in light of what some of the guys behind you are doing. And now it's just, we need you to compliment our number one guy in Cooper Flagg. Mm-hmm. And so I do wonder, like, what that does for him mentally. But, and I was talking with one of our mutuals yesterday, Steve, I'm trying to balance, this should be an easier, like, context within the expectations for Zachary Richesse. But I'm also just kind of curious about what the actual on-court context is going to look like for him and how much better that's going to be in Dallas versus Atlanta, at least in the short term. We do still have the rest of the summer for Dallas to sort out what their roster is going to be, because they have a lot of guaranteed contracts on the books right now. And I'm just kind of wondering, like, Zachary Richesse is at his best when he's able to attack tilted defenses. And I am excited to see what the minutes with him and Cooper Flagg are going to look like. When Kyrie comes back, like, how often are all three of those guys going to play together? That is a question that I have. I just literally do not know the answer right now. But it's also like, Atlanta was kind of free-flowing in that they didn't have, like, an S-tier creator after they traded Trae Young. And even when Trae Young was being traded, like, he wasn't playing at an S-tier level. But it turned into, okay, we got 4, 5, 6 different guys on the roster that can attack and tilt the defenses. So when we play out of our defense, we can just kind of flow in different areas. With Dallas, it's a somewhat similar context. So they were just a solid defense to start the year before injuries and everything else kind of took over. I don't know if they have the collective ball handling and attacking to unlock a bunch of, like, tilted opportunities for Zachary Richesse in the half court. And that's where I really want to see the health piece, because I think it's easy to map out. If Kyrie's there, Cooper Flagg is there, like, he slots in, you can kind of get there. But if they aren't in the lineups together, or if Kyrie has a long recovery, whatever the case may be, it's like, okay, is he going to a context now where there isn't as much free flow? They see a higher dosage of switching than Atlanta did. And now we're still in the same box of what does the self-creation for Zachary Richesse look like? Like, that's just a short-term question that I have, at the very least.
If I could raise my hand, do we not celebrate more opportunity to a degree? Do we not see that as something that could unlock something within Zachary Richesse? Because I think he grew within the role that he was asked to do in Atlanta. The thing is, that's all he was asked to do. And so is there a thought that maybe the potential to do more or be in a different place that could ask you to do more, does that help him overall as a basketball player? What do you think about that?
No, I think that's a fair question to have, and that's something that I'm also trying to sort through with this. I think the question that I would toss back, and this is like a genuine one, not like I'm about to counter your point. My honest question is, like, to the Richesse role offensively, how much of that is we only asked you to do this because this is what we need versus we only asked you to do this because this is what we think you can do? And, like, what is that?
I would push back because Jalen Johnson became a whole different person. And you had Dyson Daniels initiate, and you have CJ and Nah. How much, if you go back up towards the table, how many more pieces of steak were on the plate? Everyone ate. You are going to have to get a side. So that's where I'm like, I'm not necessarily saying he's all of a sudden become a different human being or a different basketball player, but I think the usage and opportunity could become a little bit different for him. in the sense that, and again, we don't know what Dallas is going to run. They got a first-time NBA head coach. Who knows what it's going to look like? But I am curious to see if that unlocks him and he's able to kind of just be more of a driver. You know, self-creation is an interesting concept the way it's discussed, because I think, you want players to be able to create by themselves. But what does that actually mean overall? Is self-creation being able to drive and force help? Does that count? Like, what category do we kind of place that in? I'm not sure. So I'll leave that alone. You didn't mention Lu Dort, by the way. You don't like Lu Dort in Atlanta?
I do. I just want to start with the Ricochet forces. And last thing I'll say before I actually shift to the Lu Dort fit, because I am also intrigued. I think the bit with Ricochet coming into the draft was more, this is someone that complements talent versus we can give him the ball 10 straight times and he's going to get something for us. And so that's why I was generally wondering and still generally wonder, like, how much of the Atlanta role shift to him eventually going to the bench, how much of that is this is where you are best versus we think you just have some limitations. And so, like, this is just what we can do with you. And then as we have more talent, shift more to uses to Jalen Johnson, as you mentioned, et cetera, now your piece of the pie is just getting smaller by default. And so, like, as he shifts to Dallas, I am curious to see, like, what the opportunities are going to look like for Ricochet. Like, how much on-ball juice he's able to display and what that volume is going to look like. One of the things I was looking up with Ricochet was just, like, what is the shot quality and what is the shot efficiency for him based on how often he's dribbling? Pure catch-and-shoot stuff, transition stuff versus, okay, we actually need you to do a little bit more. And he was around or slightly below league average when you talk about catch-and-shoot or, like, catch, pump, sidestep, whatever, whatever. You get the two-plus dribbles, you see the efficiency dip naturally as he's still building his NBA body, all this stuff. The shots after four-plus dribbles, a whole lot of mid-range stuff, a whole lot of short paint area shots, 7 of 13 from three. As I went through the film on those shots, I was like, wait, hold on, that's kind of interesting. And so I am fascinated by, to your point, if he does get more opportunity, if he's able to add some more play strength, because he's pretty comfortable now just kind of getting into between the leg, we get into a step back from there. Like, the shot mechanics and stuff, energy transfer is pretty fluid. I'm fascinated to see what it's going to look like. So I will leave Ricochet alone for the moment. To the Lu Dort portion, the question I wanted to ask you off rip was, do you think he starts in Atlanta?
No.
Okay.
I don't think he does. I don't think you have to. Do you think he starts in Atlanta?
I'm kind of torn on it. Because, like, my initial thought was no, because you have the Dyson usage. He can initiate. He could be a screener for you. Obviously, Nikhil Alexander-Walker can get you some buckets. CJ McCollum can get you all the buckets. Jalen Johnson has transformed into their all-star. And then you have Onyeka Okongwu. But I'm just like, okay, if they want to establish a higher baseline with the defense, could you talk yourself into not can you be super sub that closes versus you start the game? I think you could raise the floor of the defense, but you are getting into some potential, like, shooting, less spacing concerns. I think Quinn Snyder does a good job of moving players around, but from a shooting and, like, a shooting gravity perception, it's like, okay, well, we're already comfortable putting bigs on Dyson, though he counters with handoffs and screens, but we're fine with Dyson on the perimeter. We're fine with Lu Dort on the perimeter. We're kind of fine with Jalen Johnson on the perimeter. It does just kind of turn into, hey, what are we driving into if we start all these guys together? So I probably lean no, but I think this also just kind of comes down to, like, how Quinn feels about, like, the floor of the defense. I think you could talk yourself into, as you started with, Lu Dort, you guard number ones, be nasty. Dyson Daniels, you defend number twos and just be one of the best off-ball defenders that we have in basketball. And then you can obviously toggle those assignments whenever you want to. Like, I think there's an argument for it, but I probably lean now.
Nah, I mean, I just think Nikhil was so established as a starter last year. And the starting lineup of CJ McCollum, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Dyson Daniels, Jalen Johnson, Onyeka Okongwu went 14-4 in the regular season last year. So I don't know if they just readily pivot from that right off the rip. Now, I was surprised you were not looking to shift CJ McCollum to the bench for agenda reasons, but I don't know if they have to start Lu Dort. You can kind of just create a little bit of a chaos factory and have him come in for Dyson Daniels if need be, and then we just kind of keep a defender on the floor at all times. The closing lineups could get interesting at times, depending on what they want to do in the fourth, what they want to accomplish, because CJ is kind of the closer to a degree with what he does. We know Nikhil Alexander Walker can get busy. It's going to be hard to keep Dyson and Jalen off the court. So, like, I am intrigued to see what their attempt is. But I don't know if this is a scenario where you have to start him off rip. I would probably guess they keep things status quo and say, hey, we have more in our back pocket.
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially you bring up 14-4 as a starting lineup with that group. I just think, again, like baseline, you know, the floor level of the defense, like how does Quinn feel about that? And I think looking at Atlanta overall, I think part of bringing Lu Dort in, it is the defense, but it's also just the general physicality and force that he plays with. And I know there's like an extra layer that people are annoyed by with Lu Dort, and he does cross the line sometimes. Like, that's fair to say. It's fair to say, like, that's not cool. But Atlanta, at times last year, like, they weren't the most physical group. And so, like, again, to, like, the culture setting piece, et cetera, like, that's also where my mind goes to, do they actually experiment with starting Lu Dort early on and maybe shift back to the lineup that worked? Because Lu Dort just kind of raises your base. Like, I think that's part of why, even in OKC, Lu Dort ain't making shots. Why is he still in instead of Casey Wallace, who may just be better than him? It's like, well, Lu Dort takes on tough assignments, but there's also just a level of force, aggression, physicality that he plays with that helps us set up what we do defensively. And so I am fascinated, like, how Quinn Snyder kind of navigates that piece. But I do like the trade, especially with this being the price. Because, like, we're okay with adding Lu Dort to the mix from OKC. It's like, it's second round picks. Like, that's fine. And I'm intrigued by the Arisha piece. How do you feel about Ryan Nimhard in this context, by the way, while I'm thinking about Atlanta?
It's numbers game to a degree.
Okay.
I'm curious to see what the numbers game does for Ryan Nimhard because it felt like he had found a spot and he played really well for Dallas, especially at the start of his play with the main roster. And then no one enjoyed what he did in summer league, which is just funny. The life of a scoring guard, I tell you. Boy, we love these buckets and passes. Really enjoyed that. Hey, what are you doing? The same thing you I dribbling was doing. So- stop doing that. No, it's not for me to cook. So, I mean, he's clearly talented. He can boogie. He gets to his spots. And I'm intrigued by the fit. And so I don't know what the minutes are going to look like. But I think he does fit the mold in Atlanta, as far as his ability to just kind of self-create, his ability to pass, like, that's fun. Like, if you just Atlanta casually just adding Ryan Nimhard in this could be underrated down the line, just as far as giving them a little bit more pop off the bench.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the summer league piece because that's also what kind of made me laugh about the whole thing. I was thinking, like, this is the Gordon Ramsay gif or the Gordon Ramsay meme. Where it's like with Sergio, who's just like, oh, it's okay, please come here. And with Ryan Nimhard, it's like you donkey, et cetera. It's just it's like, no, what are you doing? It was very funny watching like my Mavs mutuals react to the Nimhard experience versus the Sergio experience, which Sergio was very good. And so like I do have the back of my question, like, will he be able to drive well enough? Will he be able to score enough to unlock the passing? Because if he does, I think there are just rotation minutes ready for him. And like with Ryan Nimhard, it showed like injuries obviously played a part too with the guard rotation. But if you play well enough, like we can get you in here. And so like there is just an opportunity for Sergio in this situation. But yeah, like the summer league turn was funny to witness on top of everything else. Yep. Last thing for me on the Mavericks front, less about not directly tied to this trade, but New York Knicks send an offer sheet to Musa Cisse. And I was like, huh. They do have a lot of guaranteed contracts. Are they going to match this, though? Because this contract doesn't seem like a ton. And, like, he's an intriguing big. Very quickly, Dallas Mavericks said, absolutely not. You will be returning. We like the offensive rebounding. We like the rim protection. Like, I think we cool, actually. So I did want to
support Dallas on that. Welcome back. Please screen and roll for us. We like your rim runs. Please continue to grow and play defense. You will not be a New York Knicks. Don't worry about that at all.
So I just want to sprinkle that in on the transaction side, which also just kind of brings me to close things out on the Dallas section in particular. Hey, when are we getting the Daniel Gafford trade? I feel like he's just kind of been in the rumor mill for well over a year at this point. And there is just a bunch of front court talent in the room for Dallas, as I mentioned earlier. I think it's, what, 20 or 21 guaranteed contracts right now? Or maybe not guaranteed, but they are pretty stopped in terms of guaranteed contracts. They have to make other moves before we get to like training camp and things like that. Is Daniel Gafford going to be somewhere anytime soon? Because that feels like the natural move to make in some capacity.
Well, where's he going? It's almost August. Where's he going to go?
Well, actually, I would. Well, the Lakers did just add like another big. I don't think it'd be super difficult to build out something. That's it's 17.2 for Daniel Gafford right now. Like that is a contract plus a possible to move him around.
That's not a location. That's a number.
Okay. That's fair. I would start the bidding with Los Angeles as a concept in all seriousness. Like, is there, I think they added a second in the Jaden Hardy trio. Like, can you get to like Vanderbilt plus something in a second for Gafford?
Okay.
I think something like that could be workable. And I think for the Los Angeles Clippers, like, obviously you just traded Zubats. We'll see how you feel about like Brook Lopez plus Isaiah Jackson. But like, they still have salaries available to put something together for Daniel Gafford. So we can start with LA as a concept. I think I'll start there.
Okay.
We can mount around. So there you go. Well, I want to do a little more.
Well, we should stick with LA and talk about the addition they had.
That's like the segue.
I woke up this morning. I went in my closet. I looked deep in there. I found my Matisse Thybulle cape. So,
oh my!
Let people know what happened.
Okay. Well, anticlimactic, but the Los Angeles Lakers signed Matisse Thybulle to a 1-year deal, $3.3 million, which I think is the vet's minimum. And so they continue to take wing swings. Steve, we talked about Zaire Williams on the last pod coming from Brooklyn. You now add Matisse Thybulle to the mix, who very quietly Matisse Thybulle. From the 2020-23 season, when he was traded to Portland, to now, has shot a shade under 38% on catch-and-shoot threes, which is, like, slightly sub-elite. But that is certainly better than, like, the Philly stint, et cetera. It's like, oh, if he can knock down enough spot-up shots, he's still not drawing hard closeouts. But if he can knock down those shots, that, in theory, gives him more of a baseline to get more minutes, which should unlock the defensive playmaking, which is the real calling card for Matisse Thybulle. To where it can get dinged on screens, but the recovery is insane. And if he's playing on the back end of actions, he is so freaking good at playing the passing lanes and flying down to get strips in the paint and things like that. And so I like the flyer for Los Angeles Lakers. How you were pulling out the cape, so I would assume that you like it too. What intrigues you most about the Matisse Thybulle
FLA? Yes, I do. I think the Lakers being able to add a wing who can play defense is important for them with the team they've kind of constructed. I don't know how many minutes it's going to be. But I feel like having an option to say, hey, we need you to do this defensively throughout different lineups could help them. And I think the biggest thing, when you look at the Lakers, they don't love to put two on the ball. They may do it at times. They're okay with switching and doubling. But Matisse Thybulle's rotational work is going to be really important for LA to kind of give them a base and someone who can just kind of fly around, be in the right spot, recover back, and kind of just keep you on track defensively and elevate you in that sense. It's not necessarily pure one-on-one clamp down stopper. Like Matisse Thybulle, at his peak, tremendous defender. I'm not sure he's at his peak. It does not take away from the fact that he can still defend his tail off. So I think they need someone like that on this team, on this roster. I think he can provide a lot of value for them, especially with the context of we have Luka Doncic. Hey, offensively, can you make shots? Can you drive closeouts? Can you defend certain type of players? Can you erase defensive mistakes? I don't know how many boxes Matisse doesn't check off as far as what you're looking for in the context. So I like the move a lot, especially because it's a low swing. Him and Zaire, I think if you get one of them pop, you get two of them to pop. I think you put yourself in a better feeling conversation as far as the different type of lineups we could throw out there. But I really like this move. The Lakers being able to kind of, let's get Walker Kessler, let's add Matisse Thybulle, let's kind of bring the vision forward as far as we know we have Luka, we know Austin Reeves can work, we know we need more defense, let's try and get as much as we can, let's try and have as many options as we can and put ourselves in a strong position.
No, I think that is fair. Like, it feels funny to say like late in the cycle since we're still in July. But to add Zaire and Matisse in like a matter of a few days, it's like conceptually I like what they're going for. Like, let's get some chaos agents in the building. Again, Zaire, if you want to ramp up the full court pressure, you can do that. Matisse Thybulle, on the weak side, could just blow stuff up. And if you are getting into switching and doubling in particular, he's just very good at just timing out passes, not just playing the passing lanes. But if I'm one of the on ball guys, I know when you're trying to throw this pass behind me, I get those kind of deflections. He's very good at that kind of thing. I also like that these are young-ish swings that don't necessarily get in the way of, if Cam Carr has who had a really good summer league, if he has a very good training camp, adding Matisse Thybulle or adding Ziaire Williams doesn't mean he just can't play. Like, it's still kind of open potential. Same thing with Thero, who also had a solid summer league for the Lakers. Like, okay, if he shoots well and continues to bring the defensive energy, like, neither one of these two signings prevent either of those two guys in particular from getting playing time. But, like, I like the add. I like the swing. Get it for the minimum. Like, you could do a lot worse than Matisse Thybulle. So I do like the swing. While we're here with free agency, Steve, is it time for the obligatory LeBron James update, since we still do not have news?
Mandatory LeBron James updates. What do we got? What's new? What's shaking? Surely with the Festival of Sports that took place, we found news, right?
Not quite. No formal announcement yet for LeBron James. I think we talked about it on Friday. Tyrese Halliburton tried and got laughing emojis. And so we know that he's not going to be... Two teams have been eliminated, at the very least. He's not going to be a Los Angeles Laker, though it would be kind of funny if he's like, you know what? Actually, I'll come back. I like this roster. But he's a Laker, he's not going to be a Pacer. I think those are the two things we can firmly rule out at this moment. The latest from Shams Charania was that the focus remains on the Heat, the Cavs, the Sixers, in whatever order you want to put them in. So it does seem like we've kind of gotten to a firm three, with obviously the Warriors still on the outskirts. The Timberwolves and Nuggets, at the very least, as of recording, haven't been officially told that they're out. But it seems like these are the three. The Heat, the Cavs, the Sixers, and whatever. So that concludes.
How many times have we gotten to this three throughout these various updates? We go from 5 to 7 to 3 to 5 to 6 to 3.
To 3.
To 5. To 7. Mysterious. Oh, 3. Only 3. LeBron, like me when I'm trying to choose somewhere to eat. I don't know. One of these places.
Oh, reliable.
Good. So the Sixer noise continues to like rattle in the back of my brain, because I feel like they put a roster where if you just slide LeBron into it, that gets real fascinating. We're talking Maxi, VJ, Jaylen Brown, LeBron, Joel Embiid. Hey, let's wear the Sixers throwbacks all year. Let's have some fun. That could get interesting. It'd feel weird, but I'm intrigued. Now, the allure of Cleveland is Cleveland. Like, obviously, you got James Harden, who's been doing some bicep curls and tricep extensions the last 22 days, apparently. And Donovan Mitchell, you got Evan Mobley, you got Jared Allen, you got a built-in team there, too. I still don't know what LeBron feels like. I feel like LeBron and Giannis feels insane in my brain. That's not something that should happen. And so I'm intrigued by the final three. Shout out to Anthony Edwards, because they asked him, hey, what do you think about LeBron? It's like, well, he gave a list and we went on it. So what you want me to do?
which one, tough. Two, appreciate the honesty. Three, I still contend the Wolves are just the actual best basketball fit for LeBron. If we're talking about like the list of seven. Like, if it's just, hey, I want to compete and I want to, it's just Minnesota for me. But it does, they're not in the three. And so is what it is.
Well, can I ask you a question before we move?
Okay.
I'm going to ask Nikias Housen a question. Of the three, what's the best basketball fit for LeBron?
Nikias Housen is insane. I just want you to know that. That is insane. So I went back to my list, because you know on Friday, I was like, well, here's the list of five, and I kind of ranked them. Basketball fit and off-court stuff, storyline, yada, yada, yada. So I did the same thing, 4-3. Best basketball fit, I went Heat, Sixers, Cavs was the order that I put them in. I see what's going on here. So it would be Miami. So it would be Cleveland, Miami, Philly. The off-court stuff, I went Miami, Cleveland, Philly. And so I think I land, again, especially as we shrink this from 5 to 3, apparently. It seems like Miami would be the landing spot that makes the most sense. The other thing, though, if I could be respectfully messy for like 15 seconds.
Absolutely.
How much of this, as we talk about the link, the list, shrinking, expanding, how much of this is LeBron being like, hey, Golden State, are y'all trading for Anthony Davis or not? I'm doing the best that I can. Like, Steph's gave his pitch. Draymond, we went on vacation. We chopped it up. I know what y'all about. I will do this if y'all can get Anthony Davis. Y'all are letting the commentary out of Washington be like, nope, AD wants to be a Wizard. We're going to bring him back. He's excited about the situation, et cetera. We're not looking to move him. Y'all better change his mind so we can do this in the Bay. And I'll still be in California. We got all like the tech connections. We want to continue to build the off-court empire. I get to play with Stephen Curry, something I've talked about a whole lot over the last few years. Me and Draymond could do fun things on the back end defensively. It's, hey, I'll do it. You need one more thing. And I saw the tweet up, the Rich Paul saying, no, the team doesn't need to do anything else. I don't know how true that is when it comes to Golden State. For me, there was the list of teams, and then Philly traded for Jaylen Brown. It's like, well, hold on. Let's consider Philadelphia. So just in light of that alone, I don't know if the Warriors swing for Anthony Davis or like Daniel Gafford, if you want to go on the lower end. If the Warriors just do something, I don't think LeBron in the camp is just going to ignore it and just stick with the three. And if it's Anthony Davis in particular, I find it hard to believe that there wouldn't be an extra boost of consideration for Golden State. That's all I will say. Not source. I'm just reading tea leaves. I'll just say that much. There may be a, hey, these are the three unless you do what I need you to do, and then we can make something shake. That's kind of where I'm at with LeBron. Okay. But we'll see.
So you're saying he sent the, I'm just leaving the house text while still sitting on the couch?
Mm-hmm. Make sure you get there on time.
I'm on the way.
Uh-huh. you tell your friend, hey, the event starts at 4. You know it starts at 5:30, but I know my friend. So that's what it is. While we're here, Steve, can we go through some other free agents that are on the market? This is not all of them. This is not just like the list of all the best. Just some intriguing free agents that are still on the board. And I want to shout out teammate Dan Devine. Recently wrote a piece highlighting some of the most interesting free agents left on the board. And naturally, it started with LeBron James. We just talked about LeBron James. Hopefully, he makes a decision soon. We'll see. Dan split this up into ball handlers, wings, and bigs. And so we're going to go through that order, go through some of the names from his piece. Steve, we start the bidding in the ball handlers group. We start with DeMar DeRozan. What is the best fit for DeMar DeRozan? Or just fits that intrigue you when it comes to DeMar DeRozan?
Anywhere, honestly, at this point. I think the beauty of getting DeMar DeRozan in this stage, you're probably not asking him to elevate your team. He's going to bring what DeMar DeRozan does to what you do. And that should be a boost for you in the half court. So, I mean, I could see him in Detroit. I would like that fit as far as, hey, can you come just get some of that bucket getting going? Mm-hmm. In different stages when we need to get buckets, and we'll play defense around you, don't worry about it. And we'll have Cade too, so don't sweat it. You're good to go. So I would like that fit. Mm-hmm. DeMar in Toronto would intrigue me. I think that would be fun. I told you already, I think DeMar in Orlando would be fun just to watch your reaction
to don't do
all
that to me.
Of the tweets that you would get. Yeah, I didn't see that. Like, what do you say to like DeMar in Houston? DeMar in Minnesota? Like, does DeMar, what place does DeMar not work? Especially if it's a good team and we can get him at something that works for both of us. Like, that's where I'm intrigued to see, where does he want to go? How does that team value him? What's that deal look like?
Okay. I think for me, like, the Detroit one is funnier now since they end up making the deal. I made the joke about Caris LeVert, like, hey, how would he feel if DeMar DeRozan came? It's like, well, actually. So Detroit would be interesting. DeMar has been linked to Miami along with Russell Westbrook as the, if LeBron doesn't come here, Miami may circle back on those guys. And so, like, Miami would make some sense, especially in, like, the non-LeBron context. Let's just get an extra score slash playmaker to up ease things when Giannis is off the floor. And I keep coming back to Boston, Steve. Why? As, like, an interesting... I think if you just want some, like, non-Tatum creation juice, especially in light of, like, Jaylen Brown's not there, and you also just have to safeguard against how many games is Paul George going to be. Like, when we talked about the trade, I love the Paul George fit in Boston. But, like, as you also brought up, hey, Paul George has been the healthiest guy. DeMar has generally been pretty durable. And so in the event that Paul George misses some time, okay, we have another guy alongside Jason Tatum that can create some offense for us. Or when everyone is healthy, you have the Tatum PG floor slash ceiling, and then off the bench, here comes DeMar DeRozan to keep things afloat. You have plenty of three-point shooting around him. You have rim runners for him. And so, like, he can just kind of be that middle-of-the-floor counter to kind of add some things. And so that's where I'm like, okay, this might make some sense.
Hey, I'm telling you right now, and I say this with kindness in my heart, light in my eyes, skin glowing, rhythm flowing.
Okay.
If the Boston Celtics trade Jaylen Brown and have Paul George and DeMar DeRozan on that roster, I don't want to ever, and I mean ever, hear the word possession maxing again. It's over. It's done. It's in the dirt. Don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear
it. Can we hang there for like 45 seconds?
No. We have more players to talk about.
I just want it noted on the record. I don't know if I see the correlation. I don't see if DeMar is the guy that brings about possession, but he generally limits turnovers with the way he plays.
Who's the guard? Give me a name then.
Okay. I think here's the thing. I think we can flow to Russell Westbrook from here. I think if Russell Westbrook went to Boston and you were like, I don't want to hear possession maxing, then I was like, okay, like Russ does turn the ball over. So like I would get where that was coming from. Like DeMar, I don't get that one within that context.
So you took an extra
like 3-point maxing.
You delivered an extra stray to Russell Westbrook for no reason, for no purpose. Where's your best fit for Russell Westbrook, buddy?
Russ has also been linked to Miami, so we'll see what happens on that front. Can I toss one that's like growing on me as a landing spot for Russ?
Sure.
How would you feel about Russ in Minnesota?
How would you feel about Russell in Minnesota? This is your idea.
Like, I think it'd be contingent on, like, you have to see how Russ feels about, like, one, he wouldn't start. But two, like, I think the closing line for Minnesota is just going to be LaMelo, Ant, Io, Jaden, and Rudy. Or at the very least, like, four of the five are baked in. And then you'll see if Io's knocking down shots or not. And so, like, it's contingent upon how okay Russ would be with that context. If he is okay, if you're telling me 96 minutes of guard play is going to be some combination of LaMelo Ball, Anthony Edwards, Io DeSumo, Russell Westbrook, that's pretty solid. And then on the nights that Russ is playing well, if you do decide to close with him over Io on a certain night, and it's like Russ gets to generate paint touches, which he still does at a high level, and now it's LaMelo Ball catch and shoot opportunities, Anthony Edwards catch and shoot opportunities, Jaden McDaniels catch and shoot or catch and drive opportunities. Like, that is, or at least should be, like an easier context for Russ. And it's also a situation because of the guard slash wing talent you have in the room, you don't need Russ to be Russ. And if he doesn't have it, this can just be a 14-minute night, because we have these other guys in. I would be intrigued, especially if this is, you know, based on the financial situation with Minnesota, especially if this is like a minimum for Russ, I'd be kind of in on him in Minnesota.
Okay.
Am I crazy?
No, I like that one. Okay. It's funny, if you look at like the top six teams from last year's playoffs, how many of those teams did Russell Westbrook already play on? It gets interesting. I'm going to throw a curveball to you.
Okay.
What about Russell Westbrook's Charlotte Hornet?
You know what? You know what? Especially if it's like a... I'm curious to see like what training camp preseason is going to be like for Christian Anderson in particular. But like, hey, we need more drivers in the building. We need more rim pressure in the building. As you know, the one thing I kind of harp on with LaMelo in particular is like, hey, how often do you actually generate paint touches? How deep do you get to the paint? Like Russ in an open system like that would be kind of fun. I don't think that's a bad fit.
There we go.
And also don't think
I've done my job. I've done my job today.
Huh. Okay. That's not bad. Huh. Well done, Steve. Well done. All right. Some other guards. We got Bradley Beal. He's been linked to Miami for what feels like forever, even before he was traded to Phoenix, all this good stuff. That just feels like, hey, we gonna circle back later in the summer. We got you, big dog.
Go ahead and prepare. I got no sources, but go ahead and prepare. Bradley Beal, welcome to welcome to Miami.
Okay, fair enough. How do you feel about Gabe Vincent? I spent more time thinking about Gabe Vincent landing spots than probably any reasonable human being. But do you have a Gabe Vincent spot?
You tell me where you landed on with Gabe Vincent, because it's late July. Not ideal to try and find a spot as a backup one. So what do you got?
This is true. Okay, so he has played in Miami before. So like there's the natural connection there. You want to bring him there.
Okay.
But I thought about Denver, which I don't know if this even classifies as a hot take considering the players we're talking about. I would have rather Denver added Gabe Vincent to the mix versus Tyus Jones, just for what they want from their guard.
You're that far off the real point guard Tyus Jones bandwagon. Interesting.
Not even that, because like, I don't feel like Tyus was bad in Denver, but I do think there's just like an off-ball variable with Gabe Vincent, some shot making. Then like there's better point of attack defense with him than Tyus. And so like even if you feel like Tyus is a better overall player, like that fit, especially alongside Jokic whenever they share the floor, like I would be intrigued by that with how he plays. But I thought about Denver. I thought about Dallas in the event that, like, okay, maybe Sergio isn't ready for, like, day one firm rotation minutes. Gabe's a guy that does not need the ball, can get into some secondary creation for you, but, like, can also screen for you. And then, again, some of the point of attack defense. Like, I think he fits pretty nicely alongside Cooper Flagg for however long they play together. You know what I mean? This is going to be 30 minutes of Gabe into the night. But Dallas made some sense for me. And then Golden State also made some sense for me. But we're also waiting to see, like, what's going on with DeAnthony Melton? Is Gary Payton II going to be back? But, like, again, he could do the screening stuff. Like, I think he's going to be fine within Golden State's motion offense and in the defense. So, like, those are the four that I thought about primarily for Gabe Vincent. I'd probably say Miami, Denver, probably be, like, my top two between the two. We'll see how Denver continues to round out their roster. And we'll also see, we can use this as a transition point, unless you had Gabe Vincent thoughts.
No, we're good.
Okay. I need the Denver Nuggets to agree with a deal with Peyton Watson. I just need them to get that done. You know how I feel about restricted free agency, and out of the interest of time, we're not going to go on that full-blown rant. The answer should just be Denver on a four-year something that pays Peyton Watson well. And you hope that he stays healthy and the creation leap from last year is real and he continues to defend at a high level, and it's just fine. In the event that that is not the case, Peyton Watson has been linked to he's been linked to the Clippers for sign and trade stuff, but I don't know how willing the Clippers are to give up like future first. And like some of the future first that they may be willing to give up are currently tied up because we don't know when the Kawhi Leonard trade is going through. And so those Toronto picks can't be used yet. Been linked to the Clippers, been linked to the Hawks, though I wonder like what happens with that at this point, considering they just traded for Lou Dort, et cetera. And they were also linked to the Milwaukee. He was also linked to the Milwaukee Bucks, which is fascinating to me for like several reasons. So like, among those three, if it does turn to sign and trade stuff for Peyton Watson, does either of those three teams like pop for you as a Peyton Watson destination?
Not really.
Okay.
I think you should stay in Denver. I think you should stay with Jokic, in my opinion. So,
yeah.
Sorry. You threw me the ball and I threw it out of bounds.
You didn't throw it out of bounds. You tossed it right back. It's fine. We're running get action. You know what I mean? That's all it is. I'd say like of the three, probably the Hawks intrigue me the most. But again, with the Lou Dort deal, like that may just be out of pocket for them at this point. I think in a literal sense, they can get to it. But I would like him in Atlanta, which is how they play on both ends. That'd be a fun bit for me. Jonathan Kuminga, is he going to be a Los Angeles Lakers, Steve?
No.
Because I don't think he's going back to Atlanta. He was linked to Cleveland a little bit earlier in the cycle, but obviously they're still on LeBron watch. There's been a lot of noise around the Los Angeles Lakers, but like there seems to be a bit of a gap between what Kuminga and what his representatives want and what the Lakers are either willing or literally able to pay him. And if the Lakers aren't willing to shell out things in a sign and trade, would they be Vanderbilt and like a pick swap or something like that? Then that gets tough in terms of even getting close to the salary that Kuminga will want. And so, like, I do wonder if he just says, like, actually, I'll just take a deal even lower than you might anticipate to try to get back on the market next year, because that would just open up the list of teams. But, like, the Lakers and the Cavs seem to be, like, the two. I would probably lean Lakers. He's been linked to them the most, and I think there is a more wide open fit, and him just being able to play off of Luka and Austin Reeves, in theory, would make sense for me. Certainly an easier offensive context for him there. That's how we'll go Lakers. We'll go Lakers for right now. Where would you like to see Nick Batum?
I'm in the DeMar camp. I think whatever contender he would want to go to, he will help.
Okay.
He will deliver the value. He'll play defense. He'll make threes. So I don't really have a significant spot. But if you told me, okay, hey, this team that's good, sign Nick Batum, I'd nod my head and say that makes sense. A lot of, like, that's just where I'm at with it. What say you?
No, that's fair. Shot 40% from three on over three attempts last year for the Los Angeles Clippers. They love him in that area. So it may just be Nicholas Batum is just back. He's happy there. The family's happy there. So it may just be that. So, like, I'd be fine with him back with the Clippers. If he does leave, though, we'd have to see, like, how the contract situation shakes out for OKC. But, like, for all the great defensive players that they have, like, they don't have, like, the 6'8", 6'9 wing. Batum could do that for 18 minutes a night. We just saw it in Los Angeles. Like, that would be a fun one for me. And then also just kind of up the three-point volume for OKC. That's always, like, something that's at the back of my head for them, even if their offense is always just good. So, like, OKC would be an interesting fit for me.
Nope, I got one. the Spurs. The Spurs.
Oh, that'd be... that would be fascinating. Let me
see Nick Batum fly around with Wimby, telling everyone to rotate. Sign me up.
Oh, that is good. Now, similar to, like, the Caris LeVert question I tossed your way when we brought up DeMar DeRozan the first time, does Keldon Johnson start to tilt his head if the Spurs also bring in Nick Batum after bringing in Tobias Harris and after giving Julian Champagne more money? It's like, hey. And then they also just have Carter Bryant that they want to get more minutes. Like, hey, I can play the three or the four, well, too. What this mean?
Well, his head will be tilted because he has that boombox. So it's not a problem.
You know what? I will let you have that one. That is unbelievable. Philly would also be fun for Nick Batum again. But I do agree with your general sentiment just because of what he does, what his skill set is. Like, he fits pretty much anywhere. I don't think there's a such thing as a bad Nick Batum spot. Unless it's a spot where it's like, hey, Nick, we need you to average 15 a night. We need you to run a bunch of ball screens. Like, well, maybe not at this stage. As far as the bigs, Nick Richards and Kevin Love were the two to harp on here from the Dan list. Where would you like to see Kevin Love? I guess I want to start there with you, actually.
Go home, Kevin Love. Go back to Portland.
Oh. Okay, get some more three-point shooting in the room. You certainly get some of the, or at least you would think you'd get more of, like, the big usage that we saw in Portland last year. Use them as a hub. I like that as a home spot.
Or, if you don't want to do that, and I understand and respect it,
mm-hmm.
Go to Miami.
Bring them back. Oh, yeah. My.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to know. Kevin Love last
year. Those are my two.
Those are your
two.
Okay. That is funny. So quickly, Kevin Love shot 37% from three last year, 7-6 in about 17 minutes per game last year with Utah. Like, he was just, like, quietly solid for them until the bottom kind of came out. We don't have to talk about it. My initial thought was like, hey, does he just go wherever LeBron ends up signing? And you just bring that connection back, because that would be interesting. Second thought that I had was, does he just go back to Golden State and you have, like, the Jimmy Butler reuniting there? But also, let's get a little bit more depth in the big room. Again, Quentin Post is gone. You have Kevon Looney is also gone. Like, we do want a veteran big in the room. Would Golden State be a fix, especially with how they play, particularly on the offensive end? Like, I think it's easy to slot him into their action. So, like, I think Golden State would be fun. Cleveland would be interesting. I guess, again, if LeBron does make Miami the choice, like, can't say I'd be upset with Kevin Love being back. Especially Pat Riley made his comments after the Thursday presser when he had his scrums, like, hey, we want to add another big to the room. Now, he did say he wants to add, like, an athletic, like, rim protector type bit. Like, that's not Kevin Love, so that would be kind of against literally what Pat Riley said. But, like, there's the prior history there. So, like, I could see it.
I'm glad you could see it. Who's finally?
Last guy we take our break, Steve. How do you feel about Nick Richards? Where would you like to see Nick Richards play basketball next season? Not the straight face. That's crazy. Nothing for Nick Richards, who quietly gave the Chicago Bulls some solid minutes. Stock might be back up. Wow. The no sale for Nick Richards. Clippers would be interesting for me to answer my own question, especially with Yannick out right now. Again, if Pat Riley says, hey, we want a bigger, burlier center, Miami for the minimum would be interesting. Those would probably be my two off the top of my head. Not even off the top of my head. Those probably be like my primary two. Go to the Clippers. You probably have a shot to like earn some like legitimate minutes there. And in Miami is a depth piece. But I would imagine he wants to play and like solidify himself somewhere. So like Miami might not be the spot when you have Bam there. But those are the two. And with that, we can take it. We can take a break. Nick Richards is the one that broke Steve. Possession max.
No, I had a perfect segue, and you did Nick Richards. Take us to break, man.
Well, we're going to take a break while Steve sorts out his thoughts that he has about me at the moment. When we return, we shift to the W. Plenty of fun over the weekend, and we have some all-star conversation to get to. Please stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot as we shift to the W side. And Steve had an eventful but a fun weekend of WNBA hoops. Wanted to start with the Indiana Fever today for like actual basketball reasons. Two big wins over the weekend for the Fever. It was the first back-to-back that Caitlin Clark has participated in this season. And she starts the bidding against Seattle with 45 points, 10 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks. The first 40 and 10 assist game in WNBA history. It then follows that up with 17.7 assists. Did have 7 turnovers against the New York Liberty, in which that was one of the wilder second halves of basketball that I have ever seen. But Caitlin handles the back-to-back. The Fever get 2 quick key wins as they continue to climb up the standings. And I don't know if quietly is the word, because maybe I'm just late to actually saying it. But the Indiana Fever, like, currently flirting with the best offensive rating in WNBA history right now. So 113.1 to lead the league. They're fast, the Aces. I think it should just be noted that even as they've like tried, and we talked about the Fever throughout the year, as they tried to tinker like where the offense is being initiated, who's doing it, what the lineup combinations are, etc. A 113.1 offensive rating is just one of the highest in league history. And if you're looking at the per points per game number, like that is, I think that's just set to be a record right now. That's more of a pace of play thing. So it's just as a general check-in, Steve. How did you soak in the Caitlin weekend, and where are you at with the Indiana Fever right now?
Well, I think as far as Caitlin Clark goes, it's just a reminder of the talent that she has and what she can display at the top end of it. And just like, okay, if we need passing, I can get us passing. We need pick and roll play, I can get us pick and roll play. If I need to get to my shot, I can get to my shot. And I'm going to add these drives. I thought the Seattle game was a lot of the work coming together that we've seen throughout the season. As far as I can put all of this together in one night, making clutch baskets, they needed a lot of them, especially late in the game. So that it was just a good thing to kind of just see, oh, the ball is going through the net. It's not stopping, and the assists are still there. Ooh, you have to deal with that. I think for the Fever overall, it's a consistent reminder of what their ceiling can be. I think they're one of the more interesting teams in the W because it's a lot to try and guard. Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Mitchell, and Aaliyah Boston. And they're going to have at least 1-2 of them on the court at all times. So you're going to have to deal with them. And their offensive ceiling raises a lot of what they can be. Now, I think the Liberty win was an important one because they had to take a punch from the Liberty. Mm-hmm. And they responded. And I think one of the things you've seen with the Fever this year is the offensive ceiling is this. The defense has not shown up at times. Oh, what are they doing? Can they survive that? Oh, the offense is this. The defense is enough. We can fight back into games. Are mm-hmm. we learning the lesson as the season progresses? So I think for me, it's just, okay, can they get themselves in a scenario, in a spot where we're really hard to deal with in the playoffs? Because we know who we are defensively. We can hone in on some certain things. And you have to deal with these three top-end players with lineups that complement them. That's kind of mm-hmm. where my brain's at. Where are you at, Fever?
No, like, I think I'm right there with you for, like, 99% of it, where it's just this was a nice reminder of, like, what they can be. Like, even to the 45-point game in particular with Caitlin, whirlwind of emotions for me, because, like, I didn't watch that game live. I was watching the Dream Tempo game, I believe it was, on Friday, and then it's kind of shuffling around from there. So I go to my timeline, and I see, I think, the W tweet graphic first, where it's like, wait a minute, Caitlin did what now? And I literally tweet out, wait, Caitlin had what? And so I watched that game the next morning. And, like, within the first 4 seconds of the game, it's Seattle winning, stealing the tip, and Caitlin Clark being called for a foul. And I'm just like, oh. Well, I'm curious to see how this gets responded to. But then early in the game, you kind of see some of the shots she was hunting. Like, there was the three-point shots, and there are also, like, two step-back middies within the first 3 minutes of the game. And I was like, oh. This seems like she's feeling good, you know, early foul aside. And so it's funny that it turned into this performance, where she had 10 assists. She really could have had, like, 15 or 16 at minimum. With some of the passes she was laying out there. Shot making was superb. And she made big plays on both ends of the floor to kind of close that game out. And so for Caitlin then talk about, like, someone asked her, like, when do you kind of know that you're feeling like that? She's like, oh, this is one of those games where I woke up feeling like this was going to be one of those. And it's like, okay, that makes sense after watching some of those early shot attempts. So it's cool to see that comfort. But it's exactly what you said, Steve. It's like you have that kind of dynamic talent, but Kelsey Mitchell doesn't stop. And over the last, like, 8 to 10 games, well, over the last 10, because just 20 or more points in all 10 of those, she just hasn't stopped, won't stop. Like, that third quarter against the Liberty, if we want to go to that game, was just Kelsey Mitchell saying enough is enough. It does not matter what you do. It does not matter how aggressive your closeouts are. I am knocking down these shots. You have fun trying to deal with this. And so when you have this blend of the Caitlin playmaking, the Caitlin handoff stuff, the Caitlin just the transition attacks, like, what should scare teams about the Fever, there's the talent aspect. They just put and keep so much pressure on you with how fast they play. And that's where, as they were dealing with their struggles early on this year, it's like, let's just, like, just wait. I understand what you're saying. I understand the frustration. Just wait. Because at the high end of this, it's not just high-end talent. It's not just actions. It's the speed of the actions. And then when you shut down one and you're trying to switch off ball, they flow to their secondary stuff so quickly. You can't keep a beat on them. They kind of force you to play their game. And, like, that is the formula tied to, as you mentioned, Steve, can we get to defense to a certain level? Is this going to be a switch group? Is this going to be an at-the-level group? Is this going to be, like, a heavy ice coverage group? Whatever the blend is going to be, can we nail those notes enough? Because you're now trying to play faster to keep up with us. We nail our coverage. You take a quick shot or turn the ball over. We're right back into the loop of Caitlin quick passing or pull-up shooting. Caitlin drives. Flip it to Kelsey Mitchell. She can shoot over you or immediately drive. If we don't have anything early, we give the ball to Leah Boston. Now we're cutting all over the place. And we just keep it going and going and going and going. And this is where I am feeling better about the Fever conceptually. Because, like, this was the vision. Like, these were things that we got to see flashes of last year before, you know, as Caitlin was dealing with all the injury stuff. But now as they reintegrate her, and now the minutes are starting to perk up a little bit more, you're starting to see more of the Caitlin skill set plus the Kelsey skill set plus the Aaliyah Boston skill set. And, like, one of the major storylines, and I toss it back to you, Steve, here, is, like, you look at some of the lineup data and, like, the Fever have just been better with, like, one of Caitlin or Kelsey so far this year versus, like, them being on the floor together. I think this is why you eat those early season lumps. Like, by the end of the year, like, maybe it's just a slight positive or, like, a slight negative in that rating. And you get to the playoffs, you're baking in on we have a level of comfort of when we're getting our shots and when we get to our spots to where, like, the net rate and such isn't going to matter. Now you got to deal with us in a series and we can just dice you up in multiple ways and kind of flow from there. So I am mm-hmm. impressed with where the Fever are right now. And again, big weekend for Caitlin. Being able to get to the back-to-back is huge in light of the injuries that she's been dealing with. Back stuff's nothing to play with. So
no, I think it's that little 4-5-6 cluster gets real interesting. Mm-hmm. I think as we record, Wings are 4, Dream are 5, Fever are 6. In theory, two of those teams are going to play each other in the first round. Mm-hmm. And they've all kind of worked to build and improve over the course of the season. So it's going to be fascinating to see who's going to be able to prove what they've done, who's going to get the payoff for their work. And so I'm intrigued to see it. But I think it was a fun weekend for some of these teams, just remind how good they are. Like Dream on a win streak. Mm-hmm. The Wings were rolling until, you know, unfortunately Paige went down. So I think there's a lot of positive momentum. It's a hard league to win in. And I'm telling you, buckle up. These playoffs are going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm. It is going to be – Hoopball is going to be tight. You got to get your gimmies where you can get them. But every night is competitive, as we've seen some of these matchups over the weekend, where you look at the standings like, oh, this should just be one you snag. And then you just don't snag them because you get beat by anybody on any given night. So that part is going to be a lot of fun. Steve, I want to ask you a question. The fear of potentially adore you a little bit. Because we talked a little bit about the New York Liberty recently, and you were displeased by the circular conversation around the New York Liberty. Big overtime win over the Dallas Wings last night, but it does feel like the noise is getting even louder with what this recent stretch of Liberty play has been. And so I just generally want to check in with you with how you're feeling about them right now. And I guess your overall confidence level in them ultimately hitting some semblance of a stride.
I think when it comes down to it for the Liberty, who are they? What is their identity? What do they do well? What type of team is this? I find it fitting. They are sixth in offensive rating. They are also sixth in defensive rating. What's their calling card? And so if you look at what this Liberty team has traditionally been, there's been an identity. You can agree with it, like it, dislike it, not believe in it, but you knew what you were going to get with them. This version's team, I'm going to ask you the question. I'm going to keep talking at some point, but like, do you know what you're going to get from this Liberty team night in, night out?
This is going to sound more shady than I intended. The only thing that I expect from the New York Liberty on a night-to-night basis is that there are going to be multiple attempts. They're going to do different things.
Let's stay there. Okay. They are going to try different things. They are going to do different things. What do they do every single night? What can you count on every single night? And I think for me, it's trying to figure out what this team's identity is, and they're going to have to figure it out and figure it out in a hurry. Because until they get back to moving the ball, until they get back to putting pressure on defenses, until they get back to playing defense at a high level, it's going to be this for a little bit. And I think that's the interesting part. I think when you look at the Liberty, they made the change coaching-wise. I think there was an assumption that identity would just carry over. I don't think it has. This isn't an offense-first team. This isn't a defense-first team. It's a talented team that plays basketball for 40 minutes a night. And I'm trying to figure out what are they trying to accomplish every single night. I think the strength of the Liberty, having Stewie, having Jonquel Jones, having Sabrina, obviously adding Satu, like losing Satu and Leo hurts a lot. We can admit that. That is not the elephant in the room. It's just the truth. But with the people you have, defenses should feel pressure defending you. They should feel a little bit of discomfort with some of the actions you run. I don't know if we felt that. And I feel like more teams have been more comfortable guarding Liberty than they have in the past. I don't mean this is not an insult, but I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think Matty Segrist can guard Stewie or Jonquel Jones?
In a vacuum, no.
Did the Dallas Wings care?
Not particularly.
That's what I'm saying. You run a pick and roll, and I don't really have to show. I'm going to recover back to the talented player. Sabrina, go ahead and take this lane. I'm going to navigate. And yes, the drives last year from Sabrina were important, and they're important this year. But they're not as impactful as far as we're not sending help. You got to finish. Mm-hmm. We're not necessarily putting two on the ball. You got to make a play. It's just, okay, let's go to a side of the court. Let's initiate the action with an empty side pick and roll, and let's play out of it. Well, we're not guarding the first one, and maybe the second one's a switch. Like, they have to hammer home the pressure points. And now what I will give credit to for them is they did that in that fourth quarter in overtime against Dallas. they did get to the point where, okay, we're going to hammer these things home, make you make a decision and play out of it. Mm-hmm. And so Stewie has been trying to make the right reads. Sabrina has been trying to get going and score. Jonquel, I would like to see more post-ups, but trying to do what the team needs. There's an attempt there. But you got to have the lineup combinations. You got to have more wing play. You got to have a stronger mindset defensively. The zone and the press, it's fun. It's a nice mm-hmm. curveball. Can't be your fastball. Mm-hmm. Cannot be your fastball. You start living in a world where you are playing it so much that teams are now just breaking the press easily. Stewie at the top of the zone is very fun until teams decide we're going to the other side of the floor where you are not, and we're going to attack there. And now you're in rotation. Go pull up the Liberty zone right now and watch how many times they're in rotation as the season develops. Mm. It's just not a thing you can kind of build this up on. And the problem is, if your zone is not working and your man-to-man's not working, and as the game progresses, teams are more willing to try and attack certain players. I mean, multiple players, right? Because you're mm-hmm. trying to put these two or three guard lineups out there to fix the offense. And the other team is saying, oh, let's get downhill. Time to get in the paint. What are you going to do? So what are you mm-hmm. prepared to do? Like, you've got to find a way to have a foundation that's a little bit more concrete than this on a night-to-night basis. Or else you're going to be in the position you're in, which is right above the Mystics. Now, the interesting part is, this is a team that was 11-4.
Yeah.
What's two of their last three wins? They beat the Aces twice. It's not like they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, will they do it? Will they get the buy-in? And so, as from a coaching perspective, you got to get this team. You got to understand what this team is. You got to know where the pressure points are. You got to make teams want to double Jonquel Jones, double Stewie, double Sabrina, put show help, open things up, drive closeouts. It can't just be, well, one pick and roll, advance to the middle, another pick and roll. Well, now what do we do? Come on.
Yeah.
Harness the team that you have. That's the thing. This was mm-hmm. a championship team and a championship contender. You come in, you have to elevate what's already taken place. You don't deconstruct it. And that's my concern. Mm-hmm. I've never seen teams feel more comfortable guarding Sabrina in pick and roll than this year. Never. Quick show. Show my hand. Quick drop. Cool, we recovered. I've never seen it. The Lynx, you know, the Lynx caused the Liberty problems because they had two bigs who could bother the Liberty's two bigs, and y'all got to get out of the mud. More teams feel comfortable. That can't be the bit.
Yeah.
It's my rant. Part of it, at least.
No. That is fair. That is fair. I want to quickly hit on the zone defense thing, and I really want to sit with the offense for a bit because that feels like the most confusing part of the Liberty season. I think if you just, like, poll people, like, why is it not this when you have this talent, even with some of the injuries? But just quickly to your zone point about, hey, it should be a counter. It should be a changeup. It can't become more of your base. Just looking at some of the second spectrum numbers with their zone, about 7 possessions per game of zone in May, up to 8 in June. So far in July, it's nearly 12. And this is, if you're looking at months, like, this is the highest, like, point per possession number allowed among the 3 months so far this year. Still, like, a solid number overall, but it is the highest that it's been. So it's just like, hey, you're doing it more. Teams getting more comfortable. And naturally, with stuff like this, there are going to be possessions where the teams break it and just miss the shot, and that knows the number. There are also going to be possessions where they did a terrible job and they hit a three at the end of the clock. Like, that's just how it bounces out. But the fact that it is going up on both fronts is worth noting. Now, to the offense point, Steve, because I wanted to ask about the Sabrina Ionescu experience in particular. I think team-wide with the Liberty, my thought has just generally been, this is a new coach trying to figure out and learn the roster while pieces are in and out of the lineups. And there's just like
an inherent level of should have done it already. Should have done it already. You're searching halfway through the season? What do you mean? Sorry. Jumped out the chair.
You are fine. You are fine. But, like, there's an inherent level of grace that I've wanted to give with this portion. And, like, tied to that has been Sabrina Ionescu, to where she has also been trying to work back from injury. And within that, working into an offensive system that she's trying to find her place in. And, like, I was responding to someone on Twitter yesterday to ask me about Sabrina, and I was just like, it just kind of feels like one, there's the recovery piece of it. It's just going to take her a little bit to get her rhythm. But it feels like we've had the games where Sabrina is, I am looking to make plays for others. I am running this ball screen to try to find Jonquil, to try to find Stewie, to try to make these kickouts when we go. There have also been the games where Sabrina's like, I am looking for my shot. I need to be aggressive tonight. There has not been enough of the nights to where you feel the blend of Sabrina Ionescu, to where she gets a high ball screen or they're running double drag and you don't know what she's going to do. Complimentary. She might string this out and hunt a shot. She might string this out and drive. She might string this out, then drive it and hit somebody. You have the off ball usage for her. You don't know if she's taking immediate shots or she's driving and just bending your defense. There have been flashes of that. I go back to, heck, didn't count towards the standings, of course, but go back to the Commissioner's Cup championship game where it's like, oh, here's Sabrina transition shooting. Here's Sabrina pull-up shooting. Here's Sabrina drives. Here's Sabrina playmaking. And then obviously in the fourth quarter, she slammed the door against the Aces. It's like, okay, it doesn't have to be the box score that she had, but Sabrina's being moved around the board. Sabrina knows where she's getting her shots and where she's getting her looks. And this is the all W talent that Sabrina Ionescu has shown that she can be. It's concerning to me that we haven't seen more of that to this point. And I think the drives in particular is where I'm just like, how much of that is her trying to regain the force and the burst and like some of the craft that she displayed last year, and how much of it is, to your point, teams are just more comfortable with how to deal with her and thus she's not getting the same advantages. And so with Sabrina in particular, Steve, like how much of it do you think it is just her finding herself, and how much of that do you attribute to the offense just kind of being haywire right now and she's trying to find herself within that?
I mean, I think part of it is finding a rhythm coming off a layoff injury. That takes time. But I think it was interesting that Sabrina did sort kind of get to cooking a little bit. It didn't really change much for Liberty's outlook. And that's where I was like, hey, what's the thing that's going to shift things? What's Sabrina's go-to action? How many pin downs are we seeing? How many staggers are we seeing? How many flares are we getting? How much movement are we creating? Is it just pick and roll or I'm spaced? How many handoffs are we doing? Like, what is the general beat here to maintain this pressure point? And so you remember me last year, all year I told you the drive's been important. The drives have been key. This is the counter for Sabrina. Let me mix in these drives. I can get to the midi. You know the three's there. I can kind of control all these. Doesn't feel that way this year. I watched Dallas. Mm-hmm. They were, New York, to their credit, ran a play. I know it was in the second half. Jonquil sets a pin down for Sabrina Ionescu. That flows into inverted pick and roll with Stewie. That should be dangerous. The Dallas Wings did not care.
That's deeply unfortunate.
Did not care. And that's where it's like, hey, we need to reevaluate this scenario and get defenses to feel the pressure of your talent, because that's what is going to bring you to the dance. That's what's going to elevate you. If you're not making teams blink, then what are you doing differently than other teams? And so I think for Sabrina, it's just like I was watching that game. I didn't even know she had taken 8 threes at the start. Came through in OT, by the way.
What did she?
I thought that was an important overtime for Sabrina, just to see the ball go through the net and get a reminder of what she can be. They're trying. Stewie took 19 shots against the Wings. Sabrina took 25. Jonquil 6-13. Only took 3 threes. So there's an attempt and an understanding of we have got to do something to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
Got to meet them halfway and give them a better scenario and situation to make this work. I think that is part of the issue. At some point, limited or not, you've got to remind yourself of what Bennie Jelani Hamilton is, even if it's 10 minutes a night. And it's interesting because Rebecca Allen has been on ice as well, and then Rebecca Allen's a starter, plays 31 minutes. You've got to empower and enable these wings. You've got to empower and enable this depth and this talent to play at their potential. This is probably the deepest Liberty team they've had, talent-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that not translate or be felt when you watch them? What is the issue there? Why do you should have optionality. Why does it feel like you are limiting your options?
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you shifted to Bennie because that has been probably the weirdest rotation thing for the New York Liberty this season. There's the obvious overall backdrop of Satu's here, then she's not. Sabrina's here, then she's not, et cetera, et cetera. The Vanija thing has been so odd to navigate and to kind of monitor with this Liberty group. Because, like, on one hand, like, is this the Vanija Lena Hamilton of 2023? Like, it's not. She's still recovering from trying to test out the knee and things like that. Like, she hasn't reached peak form on either end. And I think that's fair to say. And I think in light of the Liberty trying to find things, particularly defensively, like, if she's not her usual self, like, I understand not giving her, like, 28 minutes off rip. To your point, though, Steve, I think there is just a wide gap between, okay, Vanija, you are not at starter level right now. You're not moving the same way, at least not yet. We want to kind of bring you along slowly. And Vanija, you are just not playing, and we are asking in post-game, I'm getting questions about why you didn't play 5-6 games in a row. Like, there has to be some sort of middle ground between, we can't do this with you, but, like, we're not just completely leaving you out. And the fact that it's been so much of the latter, her just not playing, is where I wonder, and I don't have, like, sources or anything like that, but, like, I just kind of wonder, what is the actual belief level? Both in, like, how good Vanija can...
It doesn't pass the smell test. I don't mean to cut you off. It doesn't pass the smell test to me because you played Vanija 25-plus minutes first 3 games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Guess how many times Vanija has played more than 20 minutes since then?
I'm going to say once.
Exactly one time at Seattle.
Yeah!
I'm not buying it. I don't buy it. And so to come to this team, injuries, rhythm, whatever it is, and not understand what Vanija does for this team, I don't buy that at all. So hopefully that gets fixed, but, like, you gotta figure out how to make this team work. You gotta know what makes this team what it is. And if you don't, you're gonna suffer the consequences in this league. This is not a forgiving league. This is a very competitive league. Ask the Phoenix Mercury about trying to figure it out. Very good team last year. Look at where they're at in the standings. Think time moves fast. Chicago Sky had high aspirations. Time moves fast. No one thought the Mystics would be here. Wings and Dream, Fever, they're all making pushes. They're 4, 5, 6. You have an opportunity out of this All-Star break to try and turn this around. And it's one shot. It's one opportunity. Because right now you are in the land of the Lynx and the Aces the other way. It's not we're contenders with you. We're facing you in the first round. Yeah. So what are you prepared to do about it? Because you got Chicago before the All-Star break. Then you go to the Sparks. You play at the Aces. Then you play at the Mercury, who don't like you. So you need to buckle up and figure out who you are. It's the end of my rant. I just the identity has to return. You have to understand who you are. You have to play defense at a higher level. You got to fly around. Defense will allow you to flow offensively. Offensively in the half court, make your actions count. Mm-hmm. And see what you can get out of it. Or you're going to be a talented group. They're not even making jokes anymore, Nikias. It's just not like this. That people, what happened to Liberty? It's not even circular talk anymore. It's just, oh, all right.
Dang, that's unfortunate. Yeah. I guess to that point, to hang there for a little bit, we're going to transition soon. Over this Liberty era, since Stewie's been there, like, there's the obvious level of expectation that comes with having the talent that they brought into New York. It feels like they hit the high notes and it's like, holy crap, here comes the Liberty. I've been part of that. They hit the low notes and it's just like, man, why aren't the Liberty getting smoked? What's going on here? If anybody else was struggling like this, yada, 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 yada. It goes on, it goes on. It has been interesting, like, this year, there was the fever pitch of, like, hey, what's going on here? And then it's kind of subsided into what's going on with Vanija specifically. And then outside of that, there, at least from my timeline, there hasn't been, like, the usual banter. Like, this team isn't being treated like, what year is it? The 12-13 Lakers? Was that the Laker group with Kobe and Dwight and Nash and everybody else, et cetera? I don't think we've even had, like, that level of, like, joking around, like, what's going on with this talented group, et cetera. it's just been like, dang, this Menage thing's weird. And there it is. Because we're so enamored with the Lynx and other teams that are actually doing well. But yeah, it's just, that part's odd. The last question I want to toss for you, Steve, before we move. Because I think there was like early conversation about the offense looking different. And like Stewie talked about it, Sabrina talked about it, just the general thought of like, we want to simplify things so they aren't thinking as much.
It's too simple.
Clearly, as we answer. Yeah. Go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut your question off, but go ahead.
No, my question was just going to be like, did we not pay enough attention to that heading into the year? Because it is kind of crazy that that was kind of the emphasis. Like, we want to make this more simple so they can flow easier and think less. And it has largely been we thinking a lot. We don't know what to do after the first the first action or so.
I think it's the actions are the actions. And so shout out to Zoe. It's not necessarily what they run. It's, are you making it impactful? Are you making it count? Are you flowing to the next side of the floor? Is whatever you're doing something that you understand what the purpose is? Or are you getting to the next part? So if the coaching staff says, hey, we're going to keep it simple, we're going to use our talent as an advantage, that's fine. You could be, you should and could be able to do that with this type of team. Problem is, if they're not putting pressure on teams or the defenses aren't cooperating, it does not have the same impact. Watch that Dallas game, and okay, and anyone, go watch the Liberty. See how many times they go to one side of the floor, it's empty, and that's their trigger for whatever they're going to run. The only problem is it's a pick and roll. It might be a switch. It might be a drive. And then you throw it back and you swing it to the top and it might be a pick and roll. It might be a swing. It might be another pick and roll. And then what? Like, there's not that same pressure. So you're trying to play free flowing with the assumption the defense is going to make a decision and react. And you can just play off of them. As the season has progressed, defenses have said, not really. Quick show, because this isn't real. Switch, because this isn't real. I mean, you know, you love the inverted pick and roll. And I was like, well, it's cool, but I don't think you can just have that be your foundation, because eventually teams are just going to switch. Like, it's it's not about what they are running. It's, are you making a defense care about it? In my opinion. They can run whatever they want. They don't have to run 78 actions. You can simplify it. But is it impactful? Go watch the tape. Go watch the defenses react. Go watch how many times they put two on the ball or are concerned. I don't know if they've gotten there yet. And that lessens the impact of the simple actions that you run. If the defense doesn't care, then what have we accomplished? What have we done? We've not used our pressure points accordingly. I mean, simply, like, you can run a, like, if you're the Las Vegas Aces, you can run a post-up for Asia Wilson. Decision has to be made, right? You run pick and roll with Jackie Young. Decisions have to be made, right? It's not the most complicated thing in the world, but you have to think about this person doing this. It just feels like, well, we're doing this one dribble, two dribble, or I'm turning the corner, or, or.
Yeah. That's fair. That is fair. Okay. We will transition away from the Liberty. We will continue to monitor if they're able to turn it around or if this is just going to be, you know, if they're just going to hang in the 6-8 or 6-9 range, rather, because they're not a large lead over where they are with where the 9 seed is. So we'll continue to monitor that. Want to quickly transition to the All-Star portion, Steve, which very quickly, we got All-Star festivities happening on Friday and Saturday. If you got the Game Time app, download, get you some tickets. You want to pop into Chicago. Should be fun. A lot of star power there. So tap in. We do have the W All-Star draft results that we're going to talk about on Friday, but they think time got away from us, et cetera. So we're circling back now. Team Coop, Team Spoon, we got some fun rosters. We also, if you want to, you know, search the Yahoo Sports main channel, we also did our own W draft. We're going to do a 2K sim for us, so tap in for that. But we got the team, Steve. So for Team Weatherspoon, starters, Olivia Miles, Caitlin Clark, Asia Wilson, who was the first pick overall of the draft, Aaliyah Boston, Jessica Shepherd, her reserves, Courtney Williams, Ryan Howard, Alicia Gray, Neko Ogumike, Jonquil Jones, Kiki Iriafin. And for Team Coop, Cynthia Cooper Squad, Paige Beckers, who she was awarded, with a coin flip. She was the top vote getter overall. So Paige is on the squad. And Caitlin on the other squad was the second leading vote getter. But Paige Beckers, Kelsey Mitchell, Gabby Williams, Brianna Stewart, who was the second overall pick in this draft, Natasha Howard. In the reserves, Kelsey Plum, though we will see if she's going to be available or not, Marina Mabry, Jackie Young, Angel Reese, Dominique Malanga, and Sonya Citron on this roster. So just on a baseline level, Steve, I wanted to ask you, who do you feel drafted the best roster between these two? Who won the draft, if you can, if you think about it through that lens?
Coop.
Team Coop got it done.
Bucket getters.
You do enjoy your bucket getters.
Bucket getters and competitive talent. What say you? Because I know you see Caitlin Clark, Olivia Miles, and Asia Wilson, and that's it for you. It's over.
Well, I don't know. Like, I also kind of lean team. I probably lean team Coop. No, because, like, for me, like, I am a stickler for, like, overall roster balance. It's kind of my thing. It's like, I do feel like Team Coop has like a more balanced roster of like two-way talent, the different lines you can tap into. But when you have Asia Wilson, like that is just kind of tough. And then you're talking about she may be able to screen for Caitlin Clark or Olivia Miles. And it's just like, oh, that could get kind of funny. And then there's just like a collective size they could tap into as well. So like, I probably lean Team Coop as like who had a better or like a more process sound draft. But not going to surprise me at all. Team Spoon just wins the thing because of the talent that they have. But I think I like that draft. I give Team Coop the edge for the actual draft. What lineup are you most excited to see between these two?
Honestly, probably like if you give me Caitlin Clark, Olivia Miles, Ryan Howard, Courtney Williams and Asia Wilson, I think would be fun.
Ooh,
now that's my bucket getting aspect. That's just my bucket getting aspect. But if you wanted to get crazy with it, you could go Olivia Miles, Caitlin Clark, Ryan Howard, Alicia Gray, and Asia Wilson, and just have a blast.
Mm-hmm.
I think, in my opinion. So, what say you? What lineup would you most see?
We're in a similar vein because I also went to Team Spoon. I was like, hey, if we get Olivia Miles, Alicia Gray, Ryan Howard, Asia, and Aaliyah Boston. Like, that is just a lot of two-way talent and some size and some pick-and-roll pizzazz and just an overall level of versatility that I really like. And then similar bit for Team Coop, give me Paige, give me Jackie, give me Gabby, give me Angel, and give me Stewie. Look, we're just going to bully you on defense, and also we can move all these players around the board. So, like, among the two teams, like, those are probably the two that I would like to see. As a subsection to that, Steve, I also wanted to ask you, which pairing are you most excited to watch in this All-Star game?
I need Paige Beckers, Marina Mabry minutes.
Oh my. I got your pull-up biddies, and Marina's in. It's like, yeah, I got your pull-up 38 footers. We go yep. Stress you out, big star. No, that is more than fair. That's fine. I think for me it's Olivia and Asia. Like, that's a boring answer, but it's just like, if Chelsea Gray's not gonna be in this game, then, yeah, if we saw we've seen the Olivia Miles, Natasha Howard pick and roll. What do you think Olivia Miles, Asia Wilson is going to look like if they are actually given like 60% effort? Like, it's going to be nonsensical. So, like, that's probably the pairing for me. What one-on-one battle are you most excited to see? A lot of teammates between
these. Well, KP's out. KP against Asia is always a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie versus Asia, I guess. Let's see. Who else could ISO someone? Like, Dom Malanga against anyone? I want to see if that becomes a dunk. I'm intrigued there. Who else could I go with? Kelsey Mitchell against Caitlin Clark could get interesting. Could be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you. What are some of yours?
Well, Paige and Caitlin is like the easiest one to pull from. Like, these were the two leading vote getters. And like duh. Like, if there's a switch from either one of those, like, hey, is Caitlin pulling from 30? Is Paige getting into the mid-range bag? Do we get a Paige post up? Do we get a Caitlin drive? Like, that's pretty easy for me. Dom versus Asia is one that I want to see. I just don't know if the lineups are going to match up in a way that we get to see those two on the floor. But like, there have already just been fun go to the playoff series last year. Like, there's just already a lot of juice with Dom and Asia, and like not in a negative way or anything like that. It's just like Dom is just the limbs are just endless, etc. And then Asia is Asia, so it's like that. Want to see those two interact? What are you about to say?
I have a final one.
What you got?
I need Sonya Citron against Kiki. I need to see if Sonya's going to hit a step back three and then do the thing.
Oh dear. I guess while we're here, can we be respectfully messy for like 8 seconds?
Sure.
Okay, so do we get Ryan versus Marina at any point?
Probably.
Do we get Angel versus Kiki at any point?
No. Because they do enough in the regular season.
That's where I'm just like, I tell you what, that would be interesting. Okay, so those are the ones, but we are excited to see what that part is going to look like. Last question I have on the all-star front, Steve. Kelsey Plum, named as a reserve. Kelsey Plum still out with injury right now. If she is not available for this game, who do you think her replacement should be?
Kayla McBride.
I like the Kayla McBride show.
Have you seen what Kayla McBride's been doing this month?
Brother.
Good.
Kayla's been good all year long, to be clear. The like one downside to the Kayla McBride experience, you can call it that. We'll say that within the All-Star context. The one downside is that Kayla just got off to a really cold start from three. Everything else, drives, playmaking, obviously still has the shooting gravity. The shots just weren't falling. And she's been taking on tough defensive assignments on the perimeter all year long. We get to July for Kayla McBride.
Who better?
26 and a half points. She is shooting 49.3% from three on over 8 attempts per game. Fair to say the three-point shooting is back. And then my favorite part of the Kayla McBride experience, and I'll once again shout out Zoe as you did it earlier in the episode. When Kayla McBride is the on-ball screener, because the Minnesota Lynx love toss her at the elbow and she screens for someone and flares out, or like double drag, she's the first screener. Like they just move her around the board to screen for Olivia Miles and others. The Lynx generating 1.3 points per possession on those trips when Kayla McBride is the on-ball screener, which is nuts. And when Kayla McBride is setting off-ball screens in any capacity, whether it's random stuff or just within an action that they're running, 1.13 points per possession, which is also an elite mark. And so that bucket getting, that three-point shooting, the screener usage, in addition to what she's doing defensively, I would not be mad at all about a Kayla McBride shout and her getting in for the All-Star game. And like, there's also like, I don't necessarily subscribe to this. I argue with media pals in my real life about this. But if you are doing the, hey, the Lynx have the best record in the league, they should have more than two or they should have three, then like she also just has momentum for the selection on top of that with that as well. But just in our own right, she has played very well, and the three-point shooting and the bucket getting has certainly helped the case.
I don't mind rewarding a team for playing well. It's not an automatic, but I mean, if a team is the best team in the league and you have three all-stars, I get it. You know what I mean? If you're a three seed, you should have an all-star. Maybe you should have two. Now it gets tilted because, again, the Fever are going to have three all-stars probably almost every year. So that thinking gets hit. But, like, yeah, the Dream also have three all-stars. Like, this is what it is. It just keeps circling over. The Liberty usually typically have two or three. So, like, they are just built-in, baked-in things. Like, and this year is different because this wasn't a Sabrina year. You know what I mean? This wasn't a Fisa Collier year. Wasn't healthy. Like, this is Satu wasn't healthy. Like, there's elements that make things interesting.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so Kayla McBride was your pick. I was probably going to lean Kayla McBride, honestly. When we had this discussion, I think a week and a half ago, just about potential reserves, things like that. Like, Alyssa Thomas was just like a reserve for me outright if I had a vote. And she didn't make it. Mm-hmm. I guess, like, one, how do you feel about the AT case now as we've had a little bit more time pass by? And just the Mercury reps in general, because there's AT, and then there's Ka, who has been playing a lot better as of late. Though the Mercury wins just haven't piled on top. Like, the Connecticut Sun. Shout out to the Connecticut Sun, by the way. We're going to tap in with the Sun in a little bit. But either way, do you feel like AT or Ka have, like, strong cases to be the Kelsey replacement if it's needed?
You can make the argument.
they're high talent players. The team has not played as well, but I don't know if that should ding completely what they've done. I can understand the fact that they haven't won games. It being like, well, .. Like, I mean, if your team is not playing well, you got to play at a really, really, really high level to kind of compensate for that for some people. So I'm not. Mm-hmm. I had ATN, but I kind of understand if that didn't work out that way. So I wouldn't mind if a Mercury rep was in there. It's not like they're not deserving.
Okay, understood. And then last two that I want to bring up in particular to kind of close this out, because I think Kathy Engelbert is the one that decides like who's ultimately going to get in. If she is of the mind that, okay, we have to replace Kelsey with an actual point guard, I wanted to ask you about Jordan Canada versus Veronica Burton and who you'd give the edge to, because they have both been very good slash important for their teams on both ends of the floor this year. Obviously, the Valkyries higher in the standings, but like the Dream have needed Jordan Canada in a way that I don't even think they anticipated this year, just with her mix of drives and playmaking, and the defense has been very good as well. And so I just wanted to ask, because again, Caleb McBride was your pick at the top, so I think that's just where you would start. But if it ends up being a point guard decision, would you go Veronica Burton or Jordan Canada?
Veronica Burton.
Okay.
It's a whole lot of defense that's being played.
It is.
And a whole lot of offensive responsibility that may not be appreciated. So that'd be my choice between these two that you've crafted for us. What's your choice?
Oh, man. I might go Jordan, honestly. I may lean Jordan here. And I think some of this is just like the fourth quarter responsibility in particular for her. And again, I look at this from like a Dream-wide perspective where it's like, I don't love that you need this volume of Jordan Canada, because ideally this is Ryan Howard, Alicia Gray taking more of this ownership. But if you focus just solely on the Jordan experience, her drives have been so important for this group. Her playmaking off of those drives has been so important for this group. And the point of attack defense has not been, I think Veronica Burton has just been better defensively overall this year. But like Jordan Cannon has also been pretty darn good at the point of attack. And there's also the event creation tied to that. So I would probably give Jordan a slight nod over Veronica as of this recording. But I don't think you go wrong with either. So I was fascinated. Just wanted to see what, get your thoughts on that front, Steve. But with that, we are going to head out of here. So thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports main YouTube channel. That is where our W content lives. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. That's where you can get all of our NBA content. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.